Since the day we've been together, people have been asking us, Brian, you're a GM, Laura's a winemaker. That's a pretty great team right there. Like, when are you going to start your own winery?
Because it's so super simple and super cheap yeah. and really easy to do, right?
Yeah. Mm. We always knew this was something that we wanted to do. And our answer was that we'll start a winery if and only if we can do it the right way and make something really special from day one.
There. Welcome to this week's Sip with Nikki. I'm Nikki Lamberti here in Sonoma County, California, and I'm so excited for you to hear the interview that I've got lined up for you this week. So I recently read an article from one of our local papers here, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the title of the article was A New California Winery Will Change Your Mind About Chardonnay. Great title, caught my interest, and through that article, I started to learn about Brian Ball and Laura Jones, who are a powerhouse husband and wife team here in Sonoma County that have both worked previously in the wine industry and worked together at the same winery, but had a similar dream to yours truly to launch their own brand. And they did it in 2022 with Spherix Wines. And I got to visit with them, sit down, hear their story, and taste some of these beautiful Chardonnays that have been getting so much press from every type of publication, website, Wine Spectator, you name it. So you'll hear about Brian's background in the finance world and Wall Street and what led him to wine country. And also what inspired Laura to take her biology degree into winemaking and the story of how they met, what it's like to work together currently as a GM and a winemaker for Skipstone Wines. But even more excitingly, the concept behind their new and exciting brand, Spherix, what the name means and why they picked it, and some really interesting things that they are doing with Chardonnay and soon to be Pinot Noir. We, of course, dig into the topic of the perception of Chardonnays and why people tend to have such polarizing opinions of it, love it or hate it. And we talk about why that is and where both of their passions came from to highlight what we know as the winemaker's grape. We laugh about their differences in their skill sets and how that serves them as small business owners. And they share a very recent update about a huge milestone accomplishment for their budding brand. So here we go with Brian and Laura from Spherix Wines. Not only am I honored to be here with both of you to hear your story and share your story with our listeners, but it is both of your first podcast appearances.
Yeah, yes. That's right.
What? And how are you feeling right now about this?
Oh, we're excited to be here.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So as I shared in the introduction with our listeners, I was, I think, scrolling Instagram and up came a story by Esther Mobley and the San Francisco Chronicle. And the title of it was, A New California Winery Will Change Your Mind About Chardonnay. And of course, that stopped my scroll. And I read about the two of you. And I was like, I need to meet these people. I need to learn more and hear from them. And Brian sent you an email. Thank you so much for responding and not putting me in your spam folder.
Yeah, of course. We were excited when you reached out. We were very thrilled when Esther reached out to us. This was in the springtime, and she had heard about us, been reading about us, and said, I'm interested in what you guys are doing here. I think the focus on being a Chardonnay winery and something new, and husband and wife team, we own the winery, we run the winery, we're vets of the wine industry for 15 years now for each of us. And we're just really happy that's piqued people's interest, whether Esther's or yours
yeah.
or anybody else who's been following us, and hopefully some of you all who are listening today.
I would definitely say piqued is a good word. And you talked about being veterans in the industry. So I'd love to start there because you have both been working here at Skipstone, where we're recording today. Brian, you're on the business side as the GM, and Laura, you're the winemaker here. So how did you guys get here?
I grew up in Wyoming, and then I went to Southern California for college. I went to Pepperdine and studied biology. I was looking for grad school programs after school, and as soon as I realized that you could go to grad school for winemaking, I thought that sounds perfect. I'm going to do that. So I moved up to Napa. I did a harvest internship. And
what was your harvest internship?
I worked at Bukela with Rebecca Weimerk, was the winemaker at the time, and she's a winemaker at Quintessa now. And then I went to New Zealand and worked at Spy Valley. And then we started at Davis, which is where we met.
And my route to the industry was somewhat similar. Came from outside of the wine world. I grew up in Virginia.
Okay.
And
East Coaster worked, in the
exactly,
house.
Exactly, East Coast.
I see you.
Yeah, that's right. So I worked in finance in New York City. It was 2008, 2009 on Wall Street.
Oh, 2008 and, is a really fun time to work on Wall Street.
As I always say, it drove me to drink. And I said, you know what? Let's become a professional at this.
Wow.
So I had gotten really into wine in college. I worked in some nice restaurants. And my mentor literally turned to me one day at J.P. Morgan and was like, I think you should just get out of here and go do something else.
How old were you at that time?
I was 24 years old, so a year and a half in finance was apparently enough for me. And I had just gotten so into wine and said, let's pursue the dream. There's no better time than right now. When you're 24, it's easy to change your life at that moment. So I had found out about the UC Davis program as well. I was like, that seems to be a great way for people to learn winemaking. And I was visiting my parents, told them, you know what? I think I'm going to leave finance to go become a vintner somehow. And
how was that received?
Fortunately, I have amazing parents, and they were very supportive and said, you know what? There's a lot of ways to live a fulfilling and successful life, and you should go pursue what you're going to be excited about and think that you'll be able to make it work well. As circumstance had it, this was back in 2009, was reconnecting with all of her high school friends on Facebook. And she's my old high school boyfriend. Turns out that he's a winemaker in Napa Valley. Let's send him a message and how he became a winemaker. And that's when he said, you know what? Most of us hire a bunch of interns to come out and work for 2 to 6 months, get your hands dirty, learn from the ground up. And I said, that's what I'm going to go do. So
had you visited wine country ever?
I had never been to a winery until the day that I moved to California.
Stop.
Yeah, I applied to every job on winejobs.com in Napa and Sonoma County in 2010 and packed up my car and moved across the country. Worked harvest for a couple years around the world. And thought that I wanted to become a winemaker. Obviously, that's not what happened for me.
But you married one.
Exactly. I was one of the fun things that should have made me realize quickly that I wasn't destined to be a winemaker was my last harvest internship in Napa before getting into UC Davis, where, as Laura mentioned, that's where we met in 2012. And I was doing the harvest intern work and I'm forklifting barrels around first week of harvest. And of course, I drop one of those barrels and it rolls slowly across the crush pad, empty barrel, empty barrel, fortunately. And it rolls down and down the driveway and crashes right into the winemaker's brand new car.
Stop it.
And I said,
stop it.
I was like, man, maybe I'm not going to be an amazing winemaker. So I better marry one instead. So that's fortunately what happened here.
Okay.
So yeah, we both started at UC Davis in 2012 in their wine program. And we met a month before school started on campus, volunteering at a winemaking symposium, and literally been together every day since.
But Laura, you were studying winemaking. And Brian, were you going for like the business side?
I was actually in the vitenology program
as
well.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't quite quick enough on the catch up that maybe winemaking wasn't in the cards for me. So I stuck it out there for another 2 years.
The chemistry.
Yes, he did all of it.
Okay.
But yeah, after Davis, I pivoted and got more into the business and sales side of the industry. So I used to run a wine collective, Masonry, in Yountville.
Oh,
so it
has
20 wineries under one roof, all these boutique, amazing, like great producers from Napa and Sonoma County. And I was there for 5 years, and Skipstone was one of the vendors. And I loved the Skipstone wines tremendously while I was there. And my predecessor at Skipstone, Emily Wines, told me, hey, I'm moving on. And I jumped at the opportunity just over 8 years ago to meet with our owners here at Skipstone. And fortunately, they said they thought the same thing as me, that we'd be a good fit for each other. And here we are 8.5 years later, still working here as the GM. And Laura obviously stayed on the winemaking track and just had some amazing winemaking experiences around the world. And she joined me here in 2022 at Skipstone.
Did he interview you?
No, the owner of Skipstone hired me.
Yeah.
It was his idea.
Exactly. Fari and I knew we were going to hire a winemaker when we were finishing building our winery at the estate. Skipstone's been making wine now for 20 years. But we're a small boutique winery here in Alexander Valley that focuses on Bordeaux varieties. So red wines are our focus. And we had been making our wine, like most small wineries, offsite at another winery's facility. Mm. But when we were coming close to building our winery here to bring that on site, Fari and I knew we wanted to hire a winemaker who would be here on the property, running everything from a vine going in the ground to that bottle of wine going out to your doorstep. Philippe Melka had been our longtime consultant. We wanted someone here to run the show. So Fari said, Brian, I want someone who's at the very top of their game in winemaking, 100-point winemaker. Ideally, this is someone that we know already, that we can trust. And you happen to be married to the person that I have in mind. Will you let me talk to Laura? We talked it over and said, yeah, that sounds great. And they hashed it out. And that was 3.5 years ago. And that's when we started working together. And later that year is when we ended up founding Spherix together. And that's now the genesis of us coming to work together as a couple here at Skipstone and us founding Spherix.
Launching your own business,
exactly.
Which takes working with your spouse or partner to a whole nother level when you're starting a business with them, speaking from experience. Before we go there, Laura, where were you most recently before Skipstone?
Right after we graduated, I went to work in Burgundy. This was 2014. Mm-hmm. So I worked at Armand Rousseau there, which was amazing.
That's when I decided I must marry this woman, working at, you know, a $5,000 a bottle Burgundy producer.
Gosh.
I needed to lock that down.
So I worked in Burgundy, and then I came back to Napa. We got engaged in Burgundy when I was working there.
You guys, that's very romantic.
It was. And then I worked in Napa for a few years after that. I worked at Cliff Lady Vineyards.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then in 2017, I started working at Aubert. And that's...
It's in Calistoga, right?
In Calistoga, famous for Chardonnays and Pinot Noir. So I was there for 5 years. And that during that time was when Brian started working here at Skipstone.
Okay.
So I joined him up here in 2022.
So you were already both in Burgundy and here in Napa Valley making Chardonnay, and that was a focus for you. And then here at Skipstone, Chardonnay is not part of the portfolio.
No.
Tell me how the bubbling started of we need to start our own label, our own business together, and we are going to focus on Chardonnay. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I love Chardonnay. We've always both loved Chardonnay. It was an early inspiration in my wine career.
Was there an aha Chardonnay, like one that you drank that?
Yeah, there were a couple. So when we were in grad school, there was a student tasting group where students would pool their money and buy a few nice bottles. And there was one that we did where we tasted some high-end California Chardonnays. And I had never tasted them before next to each other. There was a Marcusson and a Kistler and a Consgard in there. And I just remember being just blown away by these wines. And then when I worked in Burgundy, Rousseau only does Pinot Noir where I worked, but they set me up with some visits to other domains. And they set me up at Rouleau in Meursault, one of the top Meursault producers. And I did a barrel tasting with Jean-Marc Rouleau. And that was such an incredible experience for me.
Wow.
We were tasting everything from their regional wines to their Village to their Premier Cruz, and just every wine was just more exciting than the last one. And it was just a really incredible experience for me. I remember I think I called Brian after it and told him about it. And then, so when I got the chance to work at Aubert, that was my dream job, to be able to work and learn from the best there. And so, when we decided to start our own winery, we just always knew it was going to be Chardonnay.
Yeah, for 10 plus years since the day we've been together, and we're clearly seen as a couple that was going to be together for a long time. People have been asking us, Brian, you're a GM, Laura's a winemaker. That's a pretty great team right there. Like, when are you going to start your own winery? Is that something you want to do?
And because it's so super simple and super cheap and really easy to do, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, we always knew this was something that we wanted to do. And our answer was that we'll start a winery if and only if we can do it the right way and make something really special from day one. So we were very patient in that. Again, we've been together now for 13 years, married for over 10. And we both wanted to progress our careers and learn our respective part in the industry to a level that we felt great about. And we feel like we did that. And in 2022, the moment arrived where it was the right time and the right grapes came our way. So we launched because with the 2022 vintage, with our wine that we make from just on the other side of the fence here at Skipstone from the Upper Barn Vineyard. And this is this just absolutely like legendary Chardonnay vineyard that is owned by the Jackson family, who are our immediate neighbors here. And this vineyard was planted in the early 80s and was discovered by Helen Turley. And it was the Peter Michaels Chardonnay from the 80s through
a lot of name dropping
late
in one
2000s.
Story.
I know. Like, this is
an amazing.
Absolutely like legendary site that's passed from one amazing winemaker to the next. And Marcuson made a single vineyard Upper Barn Chardonnay as well. And no one has had this fruit outside of the Jackson family keeping it for themselves for Stone Street since the mid to late 2000s until us. We just got to know Chris Jackson. And
so through relationships
absolutely.
That became available and to you, that's how it all happens,
exactly
right?
Exactly it is. This is such an amazing community out here in Sonoma and Napa counties. Your neighbor, Vintner, is also one of your friends and partners and cheerleaders. And he's like, Brian, I know Laura's been making the wines at Aubert for the last 5 years. Those wines are so amazing. I said, between us, she's about to leave. And we're hoping, if and only if, we get something really great, that we're going to start our own winery focused on Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. You're talking to the guy who has some of the best stuff out there. And
love those
would
moments.
Love to get back to what my father, Jess Jackson, always was committed to in the 90s and 80s. It was sharing some of our like finest vineyards with new, highly talented winemakers in their respective genres. And I'd love to work with Laura. She's the rock star. I'm not the rock star.
He's a good hype man.
Yeah.
He's the what? A hype man?
He's a good hype man.
Yeah. That's why you're a great combination.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, generally the winemaker is the rock star.
Yes,
sorry.
Yeah. Exactly. I just answer the phone.
Especially when it's a female. Even more rock star status.
Exactly. So, no, like I said, the best decision I made was to marry well. But no, it really was her pedigree for making some of the most collectible Chardonnay out there and then being delicious wines is what ultimately unlocked our ability to get into this amazing site and to those that have followed from here with successive vintages as we've added more and more. We put our money where our mouth was by saying, if and only if we get something amazing, are we going to start a winery? We had something amazing, so we have to now start this. So that's when we launched Spherix, which was in 2022. We did just that Upper Barn Chardonnay, and we call that wine the If and Only If Chardonnay.
Which I have in my notes here because I want to ask you about the great names of If and Only If, especially for your inaugural Chardonnay.
Yeah, so it was a call out to our answer to when are we going to start our winery, but also everything to do with the names of our wines is a callback to the name of our winery, Spherix. So Spherix is the title of this ancient Greek foundational text on spherical geometry. I was a math major, so that kind of resonated.
Wow, but we just went deep into Nerdville. Okay.
But also, my last name is Ball, so like a sphere.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a play on ball, too. But yeah, each of our wine names is related to that. So like in math or logic, if and only if statement is the closest relationship between two different things.
Okay.
So we found that also fitting for the wine name. We poured in the glass another of our wines called the Overline.
Overline, yeah.
So this wine comes from Carneros. So this is our only wine that's from over the county line into Napa Valley, thus
hence
the name.
The name, got it. Okay.
But also in ancient Greek, every letter was also a number, and you delineated that letter turned into a number by overlining that character. So again, that little fun play here. But Laura can talk about the Overline Chardonnay maybe, and we can little sip together as well.
Do you mean a sip spotlight?
That's right.
Sip spotlight.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. This has been so hard for me for the few minutes that we've already been talking to see this sitting here in the glass and not sip it yet. So I'm very excited. First of all, cheers to you guys.
Cheers.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. So this is the 2023 Spherix Overline from Napa Carneros. It's the coolest site that we work with. So it has a lot of acidity in it. It's a mix of three different clones. It's a Winty clone, Mount Eden, and the Hyde clone. And then 2023 was the first vintage of this wine for us. I guess I can take you through my winemaking while we...
I'll nerd out with you. Let's okay. do it. Yes, absolutely.
So I'm inspired by the wines of Burgundy, so I use very Burgundian techniques. So this is whole cluster pressed. It's barrel fermented. I do really long, cool fermentations. Mm-hmm. So my fermentations last through the spring into the early summer. So about 9 months.
Similar to what Mark McWilliams was talking about at Arista.
Yep.
Long, cool fermentations for Chardonnay.
Exactly. Yeah, they do the same thing over there. And then next week, I'm going to rack all my 2024s, the next vintage. I'm going to move everything into a stainless steel tank and hold it there for a few months before I bottle it. So I finish everything in stainless, and then I bottle it unfined and unfiltered.
Yeah, we're definitely going for this amazing mix between the kind of old world, new world style for Chardonnay. And I think that's what Esther's article is getting at, right? It was
the winery will change your mind about Chardonnay. I was like, why do we need to change people's minds? What's going on there?
Yeah. So I think one thing that we really have in abundance here in California, right, is this warm, sunny weather. Right? We're the sunshine state. So when you have that, you're going to have this naturally luxurious profile. You're going to have these nice, full flavors in your grapes and the wine that you make from it. But with Chardonnay, sometimes at the expense of that richness, you might lose that energy. We want wines that are full flavored, but are packed with tension and precision and energy in the wines. So you want that to cut through and give you that amazing pop in the mouthfeel and in the wine that helps carry that through. So it's refreshing and extremely hedonistically satisfying at the same time.
The Is he also your director of marketing? I mean, the words alone I had written down right on your website, it says wines that emanate energy and substance. And I underlined energy, and I love that you just said it. Because again, I think like us, when we're in the wine world, we're used to words like energy and tension and things. A wine drinker who's sitting at home is like, they're talking about energy with wine. So can you talk specifically about what you mean by that when it comes to wine?
Yeah, when I think of energy, it should feel that almost electrifying moment in your mouth. You taste the wine, but it gives you that acidity, which is that pop. That's what makes your mouth water.
I call it the exclamation point.
Oh,
At the end of the sip, the punctuation.
I love that. Yeah. You should be excited when you taste the wine. You should feel that on the palate. And for me, that's always been like the signature in all of Laura's Chardonnays that she's made in her career, is they have that voluptuous texture, but without sacrificing that energy in the wine, that vibrancy that makes you want to just keep going back and drinking more of it. So it's satisfying if you're drinking it with a hearty meal so that it'll stack up against some richer food. Or if you're at a day like today where it's a beautiful sunny day looking out at the vineyard and want to drink something just really refreshing, like it fits both of those boxes. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Laura has always done just so amazingly well with her wines.
Beautifully said. From a winemaking standpoint, is the way that you capture and retain that energy related to acidity?
Yeah, it's partly acidity. I do look for a balance there with the acid and then the body and the texture that Brian was talking about. I also think the long fermentations that I do just maintain some tension in the wine because it's active for so long. Like it's always producing carbon dioxide. It's not oxidizing or getting tired. And I think that keeps a lot of that tension and energy
it's
in
like
the wine.
It's running a marathon.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, fermentation.
And then I keep it in the barrel. So it's in barrels for about 11 months. And then it's in stainless for another 5 months. Mm-hmm. And I think moving it into stainless adds a little more.
It's a change of scenery for the wine. Oxygen exposure, all of that. Right?
It's a little more reductive environment in the stainless to finish it off.
I love that you use the word voluptuous, but I think for a listener, when we say voluptuous, they might think it's rich and creamy and buttery. Those words that Esther, probably why she said we need to change how people think of Chardonnay. Not that there's anything wrong with that style, but this is not that. It is voluptuous, but it's not flabby,
yeah,
which
exactly.
is the word that we use speaking about Chardonnay. So yeah, tell me, what style were you setting out to make? I know you said it's a sort of a combination of California and Burgundy. It's Old World,
exactly,
world coming together, right?
Yeah, it's Burgundy inspired, but it's California Chardonnay.
Well, you're in California.
We're in California. Yeah. It should taste like that. What's great about California is it's warm and sunny here, so the grapes ripen really easily. And we get all those great stone fruit flavors in the wine along with the citrus.
We will be right back. I had the most healthy and delicious lunch the other day. It was a salmon patty over a bed of spinach, and it was loaded with omega-3 and fatty acids. I was so proud of myself. And this beautiful fish came from Sina C. In episode 69, you heard my awesome conversation with Sina Wheeler. She is from a fifth-generation fishing family, and she and her husband, Rich, founded Sina C, where he catches wild, sustainably caught fish in Alaska, and then they cut it and package it and ship it beautifully right to your door, and it arrives premium sushi-grade quality with a special recipe card on what to do with it. Well, now that it's summer, that means everything is in season right now, from their specialty sockeye salmon to halibut, cod, crab cakes, which is my mom's favorite. They're a small family-owned business, and they've been kind enough to create a discount code for our listeners. The code is SIPNC, S-I-P and S-E-A, SIPNC, and you can use that at their website, SinaC.com. SinaC is S-E-N-A-S-E-A.com, and you can get 10% off your order with that coupon code. This can be for a one-time purchase, or also popular is their subscription box that you can create or let them curate for you. Their website is loaded with grilling recipes, which are great for summer, and lots of inspirations of what to do with all of this beautiful fish that they will send right to your doorstep. I encourage you to sign up for their mailing list because they do a monthly drawing for a $50 gift card every month. So check out their delicious fish at SinaC.com. Healthy fish delivered easy. In episode 78, you heard Liz from American Olive Farmer share her basil, lemon, and garlic olive oils with me. And then in episode 83, Pairing Night with Dr. Hobie, you heard us blow our friends' minds when they tasted them, as well as her balsamic vinegar and olio novello. Well, Liz and her husband Donald operate American Olive Farmer, which is here in California, and they are some of the most delicious olive oils and vinegars I have ever put in my mouth. They are superlative extra virgin olive oils, 100% grown, milled, and bottled here in California. And you can purchase a variety of different oils depending on the time of year. But right now, those three flavored oils are hot, and you can buy them in a bundle of all three and save. Serve them for dipping alongside your charcuterie board or drizzled over your pizza, which is my favorite thing to do. You can set up a subscription for savings and have all of their beautiful products shipped right to your door. So check out American Olive Farmer, not only for oils and vinegars, but beautiful accessories and gifts. Liz and Donald have been kind enough as our sponsor to create a discount code for listeners. So use the code SIPWITHNIKKI at checkout, capital S, capital W, capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, and they will give you 10% off your order. Go check it out. You're welcome. And now, back to the show.
Chardonnay is just like the ultimate winemaker's medium too, right?
Yeah.
You can make really great examples that are super zippy, much higher acidity, crisper. You can make really great examples that are really big, really voluptuous, highly textured, riper wines, if that's your jam on either side, and then everything in between.
Yep.
And we find ourselves, the wines that we love the most are ones that have elements from both of those camps. And I think that's what Esther was saying, was that, like, you don't have to be all the way on one side of the spectrum to be a standout, if
right.
you will. We want to be best in class in the kind of profile of wines that we're trying to make, mm-hmm. what it is that it inspires us and makes us want to make those wines.
Yeah.
Hopefully people, when they taste our wines, agree with that.
I do right now. And what I also love, if we go back to the word energy, that last sip I finished probably at least 20, 30 seconds ago while you were talking, there is still energy on my palate. There's a long finish. It's percolating. It, as Karen McNeil would always say, there's choreography happening on the palate. So I love that, that it's not just like, gum and scene. It's still going and it's changing and it is enticing me to, ooh, I need to take another sip.
Yes,
because it's dancing on my palate.
That's great.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you just said, Brian, because one of the things that as a wine educator that I've always taught people about Chardonnay, as I've said, the nickname for the Chardonnay grape is the winemaker's grape. And I don't know where this came from. Somewhere along my education, I learned this. Because I talk about how it's a nice canvas to start with, but you can really change it. It's really malleable. You can really style it based on where it's grown, fermentation, oak versus stainless, whatever it may be. And that's why there is such a big spectrum of Chardonnay that you were talking about, where you're landing in the middle as far as spectrum of style. Do you agree with that as a Chardonnay winemaker that it is your grape, the winemaker's grape?
Absolutely. What I love about Chardonnay is, like you said, it's a great canvas. The grape in general is a neutral variety, so it really takes on the characteristics of where it's grown and what clone it is. A fun thing for us to do when we're tasting our wines with people, the three sites that we source from are all very different, but the winemaking is all the same. So it's a really fun exercise to go through all of them and just really see the site come through. So the Overline that we were tasting is a really cool site. It has that acidity and tension and minerality that we were talking about. And then we make another wine called On Days and Nights, which is from the Russian River Valley. It's from a much warmer site, and you really get a little more texture and richness on the palate. And then the If and Only If is a whole nother level. So it's a really high elevation vineyard at 1,800 feet. And it is the...
He's coming over to pour something else for me. I was savoring the Overline. Thank you.
So the Upper Barn Vineyard was planted in 1982. It's a old Wente clone. It's on AXR1 rootstock. Nothing is on anymore. It's a really special site that's very different from any of the other Chardonnay that I've worked with. When you taste our three wines together, you can just really see the differences in the site shining through.
I think for my listeners too, they've heard me talk about clones and explain what different clones are and why it's important. But would you say that, especially when we're talking about, especially Pinot Noir, because there's so many, but Chardonnay, that the clone really makes a difference as far as the expression in the glass? Not that clones of Cab are not different from each other, but would you say it's more evident and more apparent in Chardonnay?
Yes, I think so, in Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Yeah, a lot of what we work with is different Wente clones.
So we have a pride.
Great. Yeah, it's a great one. Yeah. Some of the heritage clones are what we tend to work with. And so what Brian just poured you is a barrel sample.
Out of a Shiner, not labeled. So a barrel sample. Thank you.
I pulled this morning. It's a barrel sample of the 2024 If and Only If Upper Barn Chardonnay.
Okay.
So this will be racked up to tank next week, and then I'll hold it there for 5 months and then bottle it in January.
How'd you decide on 5 months? Why not 4 or 6?
So I leave it in barrel for 11 months, and that's for a couple of reasons. I do think if you leave it in there much longer than that, the wine can start to oxidize, start to get a little tired. For the style that I'm making, there's other people that leave it in longer, and it definitely works for them. And then also a little bit is for logistics, because I need the barrels empty.
It's a real part of winemaking too. Logistics.
The incoming
the
harvest.
Big puzzle.
So I have the next vintage of grapes coming in. Those are my used barrels that I use. And then it's really fascinating to taste the wine when it's in tank. It's a great time to visit us when I have wine from August through early January when the wine's in the tank. It goes through so many changes during that time. It tightens up a little bit and it closes down and then it opens back up. So I've found that between 4 and 5 months is a good time to leave it in there before bottling.
And where are these tanks? If you're saying like people could visit with you and maybe taste out of these tanks, where are they?
We make our wines in Healdsburg, and like most small wineries, we actually rent space at another facility.
God bless the custom crush business model for the little guys like us.
Exactly. It's what makes us be able to do what we do.
Yep.
But we have an amazing partner that lets us make our wines there and also allows us to host people. So if you're ever looking to come out, just reach out to us at Spherix. You can go to our website, spherixwine.com, and you'll be able to email us. We'd love to host you, give you behind the scenes in the cellar. Like Laura said, summer and fall is amazing because we'll be able to do what we're doing today. Taste a wine directly out of barrel and give a preview of what's coming up. So it's a really fun behind the scenes to see what it is that we do and what Laura is doing to make the Louise wines so special.
I think that could be a really unique opportunity for people who are listening who do like to come out here. There's so many beautiful places to go and be in a beautiful tasting room with a hospitality person, but to stand in front of the barrel or the tank with you guys and taste these wines as they're in progress, what an amazing experience for people.
Yeah, it's a fun one. So it's just Laura and I that work and own and run Spherix together. So you're going to be talking with the person who's either making it or is married to the person who's making it.
We're drinking a lot of
the
it.
The person selling it.
Yeah.
Delivering it.
That's so cool. Thank you for extending that opportunity. Yeah.
We'll, absolutely.
We'll definitely, I'll put the link in the show notes so people can find that to reach out to you to set that up. So back to this wine that you pulled out of barrel this morning. So 2024, and this is from the vineyard pretty much where we're sitting. So completely different than Carneros.
Yes.
Would you almost say there are, you can't get that much more different within the same county than Carneros in Alexander Valley?
Yes, probably.
The yeah, Sonoma Center.
The elevation and, and the age of the vines.
It's just the heat, isn't it? It's heat. Much warmer up here.
It's warmer here, but when you go up the mountain, it's pretty interesting because it doesn't get as hot during the day, but it also doesn't get as cool at night.
Okay.
So the diurnal
less of the diurnal shift.
Yeah. So the ripening's different up there. But yeah, like you said, it's completely different from the Carneros wine that we just tasted.
We'll have to cheers again because we say new wine, new cheers. And we're going to include Katie, who's sound engineering today. Thank you, ma'am.
Cheers.
Cheers, Katie.
And we're all going to taste it.
So this is the second time that Brian has tasted this wine.
Really?
Because I don't let him taste it while it's fermenting. Because
he'll die.
The first
no, so you won't die if your days are fermenting wine.
As I've said, my fermentations are very long, and you know when wine's fermenting, it tastes
funky.
Funky. And it's cloudy. And our first vintage with the 2022, it was this wine. It was the only wine we made. And as this was a major investment for us, like that we were starting this together. And we were so honored to get our hands on this Upper Barn Chardonnay that we were working with.
No pressure.
And I had a sample. I was just so excited. I think it was just finishing primary and just starting mallow, which is probably the weirdest time to taste it. But I wasn't even thinking about that. And I poured Brian a taste. And he tasted it and looked at me and said, Laura, what did you do? Like, he said, it tastes like kombucha. And then I just stopped. I was like, you know.
But had you ever tasted wine at that stage before?
You know, it had been a very long time. Like, I've already established my winemaking bona fides were destroyed
when I dropped
the barrel. Yeah, I'm not welcome for many reasons, apparently, in the cellar anymore.
I feel like once a year, he gets a late night phone call where I'm asking him to come to the winery. To help me.
That's when I know it's really dying.
Because you're losing your shit in that moment.
So yeah, he helps in the cellar sometimes.
Yeah, I'm definitely like the B team in the cellar at Spherix.
Do you feel like in a moment like that where something's going down and, you know, you're having a stressful moment and then you call in the B team, is that where maybe not only the working relationship, but the relationship of being a couple, being husband and wife, like you can balance her out in that moment? You can lean on him in that moment?
Well,
does that play in?
No. But what's nice, we love working together at Skipson, where we're full-time employees and running a business together. But what's so great about it is that we do different things and we're both great at what we do, but it's totally separate.
I was totally trying to romanticize it. And she was like, no. And I love that about you, Laura. Keep me honest.
Yeah, I was about to agree with you and be like,
And if Michael was here at the moment, he would be rolling his eyes when I asked that question. So I get it.
We balance each other out. Obviously, he's more front of the house.
We definitely both have our strengths and both our experience and what we just naturally gravitate towards. There's no way that I'd be able to make wine this stunning. And that's Laura's amazing contribution to what we do at Spherix.
And what's so nice about having him is most winemakers are bad at sales and don't know, you know, where to even begin with selling wine. Okay. So that's so nice for me to have, just not have to worry about.
Why you married him.
I know. Just not having to worry about that or deal with it. There was one time early on where I realized how terrible I was at sales and business. It was right after harvest 2022. So the Chardonnay was in the barrel fermenting. We didn't have a name. We didn't have a website. Just we were getting the business set up. And I think it was the first dinner party I went to after harvest, emerged from the cellar and put on clothes that weren't wine stained. And we went to a dinner party and there was some high interest wine collectors there. And I started telling them about what we were doing. We got this Upper Barn Chardonnay and my background. And this guy was just so interested. And he said, "Oh my gosh, this sounds amazing. How do I get some?" And And Brian overheard the whole conversation. And I said, "Oh, like, we don't have a website up. Just check in a year from now." And Brian,
he was like, "Oh, no, yeah."
He cut in. He said, "Excuse us for a minute."
"Hello,
like,
sir."
Yanked me aside. I said, "Laura, get his email." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So then he set up a Google Doc on my phone so we could add emails.
Capture interest.
He started building our mailing list very early on.
Smart.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's how we got started with just those first 200 cases. And we released our first wine a year and a half ago. And we're just really excited to be sharing what we've worked for 15 years a piece in the industry on. And moving forward from here, we have even more coming out next year. We're going to be introducing Pinot Noir into our portfolio, which is very exciting. So Chardonnay is certainly always going to be our heavy focus here, given the love that we have for it. But of course, what's a great companion to amazing glass of Chardonnay is some amazing Pinot Noir as well. So next January, we'll be sharing our 2024s, which will be the first Pinot Noir along with these three same Chardonnays.
Very exciting. Do we have a name for the Pinots?
Stay tuned. We will be sharing that. Yeah. That's one other thing that Laura contributes well. Is she's the one that's come up with every single name.
Oh, good. I struggle with the naming. Naming's hard.
It is so hard. Stressful. It was the hardest part for us.
It really is.
Everything's taken.
Yes, I know. You sit there and you Google, you're like, no, I know. I've been there.
And so... Yeah, but we were really happy when we found Spherix and we said it out loud and we're both like, "Oh yeah, that's it." And it was available. Yeah.
Sounds right. Felt right.
It's hard to really mispronounce. Like, it's mostly phonetic unless people say they could say Spherix or Spherix. Right. But either way,
at least it's close enough, right? Totally acceptable ways to say it.
Yeah, and that's important too, as we were looking at Stolovato for our label, which is in Italian. I'm like, people can't really butcher that. It just sounds like it looks.
Yeah.
And that's important, right?
For sure.
You don't want to lose people right away at the name.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's important. Okay, so we got, in a wonderful way, a little bit sidetracked in our storytelling, but I want to come back to this wine because I really want to give it the moment that it deserves as I taste it. I've been smelling it, but I haven't tasted it yet. But even on the nose, completely different. Yeah. I mean, we're not apples to apples because we are still in barrel and it's a different vintage, but
yes,
the difference in the sight, I think, is very apparent. But the winemaking is the same. Fermentation,
yeah, winemaking
yeast,
the same. Yes, I don't.
Secondary.
Yeah, yeah, all of that's the same. But then this one hasn't had the stainless treatment yet. So this one's still in the barrel, just like about to come out of the barrel. But it's still a nice preview of what's to come with this wine. I'm excited about the 2024s. I love the 24 vintage.
Yeah, every spouse of a winemaker knows the emotional roller coaster that is harvest. But 2024 was the harvest that I'd never seen Laura as relaxed and confident in the moment as she was with 2024. Every single week, it was like, "Oh my God, the grapes that we just brought in were perfect." Casually wait another 5, 6, 7 days. The next grapes come in. They're
so
absolutely
the pacing
perfect.
Of so it just, is what we hope for, where it's not all at once, right?
Yeah, because 22 was all at once. And then 23 was the wine that we tasted before this was a very late, long, you know,
we're all cool tapping our fingers, waiting for ripening.
I don't like that.
No.
So 24 was just a nice pace.
Deserve that after some of the years that we've had, just with timing.
Exactly. Yeah. But really, it's all about, like, how does the wine taste in the end, right? Mm-hmm. And 24s just are so delicious. We're getting a sample here, which, like you said, it's just, it really is a totally different wine than the others. And for us, this is where the sight shines through in the glass here. This is as special of a site for Chardonnay as it gets in America. And we're just unbelievably thrilled that we get to continue working with this site after such an amazing lineage of iconic winemakers that have worked with this before. So we're very happy about that.
Congratulations. It's stunning. And the way the sun is coming through your glass, I'm just looking at these tears that are dripping down. Because there is a viscosity, there is a mouth coating to this, and that I know may change after some time in stainless, but right now it's very rich feeling, but the taste is still elegant and restrained. It's not blah, right? It's not, do you know how to spell that? B-L-A-H-H-H-H-H-H. And I think what I really want listeners who are just everyday wine drinkers to know, and I still feel as a wine educator, we lead this charge and we fight this battle all the time about the perceptions of Chardonnay, because there's so much out there that is not good. There's so much wine out there that is not good, but specifically with just some of the commodity Chardonnays that are there. But when coming from such a legacy site, to use your words, with such a talented, intuitive winemaker, and a great name and business behind it, that makes it all happen. But just the layers that are in this glass in front of me right now are just as complex and interesting and exciting and changing and evolving as a Cabernet Sauvignon or some of the things that people expect that more from. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think
stunning.
Yeah. I've always admired the great white winemakers. I think it's just such a specific talent to be able to make a white wine that, like you said, can be on the table with all the great red wines and be just as interesting.
Speaking of on the table, talk to me about what this wine specifically, if you were to take the rest of this sample bottle for dinner tonight at home and create the perfect pairing, what do you like with this?
I think the thing that's just so great about this wine is it has that richness that it can go up against something really full, luxurious dish. Think of like lobster bisque or something that is like as creamy and
lobster
rich
mac
as it
and
gets.
Cheese.
Yeah, it will absolutely
Shuffle
hold up to
mac
that.
And cheese.
Yeah, we can keep, yeah, let's keep going even more decadent. What else
with
can we throw on there?
Top.
Yeah, there we go. But it has the stuffing to hold up against that. But also, we've done wine dinners where it's actually leans more into that zestier side of the wine, that brighter, zippier quality there that we talked about, where it's gone up with a hamachi crudo. Ooh. As well. So it just
you said my favorite
that,
word. Say it again.
Yeah, hamachi crudo. Yeah. So it just can go to the two extremes of pairing.
Yeah.
Because of that richness, because of that energy that we've been talking about, that just makes this wine so wildly versatile. So yeah.
So this will be available when?
We do our offering to our mailing list in late January each year, where we break down what we have. So we're going to have the four different wines from 2024 that we talked about, and we'll be sharing those with our list members in January and starting to get them in people's hands that following month. We like to get the wines out there for people to start enjoying as soon as we possibly can.
So people should get on your mailing list, which, again, I'll share in the show notes the link for them to do that. That's how they can get access to these wines.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the best way is for us to be able to keep in touch with you directly. So it's spherixwine.com. You can sign up for a mailing list there. That way we can stay in touch with you on any other news that we have from the estate. And if we're ever out on the road, when you're in Dallas and we're doing a tasting
we got a lot
or
of Texas,
dinner in
Florida,
Dallas,
Jersey,
or wherever it is that you are,
we also have
this way we know how to reach out to you.
46 other countries listening
wow.
And I know you're talking about expanding potentially internationally.
Yeah.
We have a lot of listeners in a lot of countries.
Oh, amazing. Well, we got a lot of places we still need to go, Laura, so let's go see everybody.
Yeah. People should be excited to try them because they're really interesting and exciting, and I'm just going to go back to that word energy. They are full of energy, and now I'm full of energy after learning about them.
Love it.
What have we not talked about?
Yeah, again, it's just Laura and I that own Spherix. And we have made our entire careers in the wine industry. We didn't come from outside the industry with many millions and millions of dollars to start. We started with making a couple hundred cases and slowly, bit by bit, have grown. And we were buying grapes. All three of the wines that we've discussed from the 2023 vintage are partnerships with different growers. And one of our dreams that we had when launching Spherix was not only to have our own winery that we're making wine for, but also to have our own vineyard. And earlier this summer, we were able to acquire our own estate vineyard. It's in Occidental and Freestone. Mm-hmm. It's the
Sonoma
heart
Coast.
Of Sonoma Coast. And I remember us talking about it several years ago. I'm like, Laura, if you could wave a magic wand and say, we now have a vineyard, where would that be? Points to it on a map, basically. And that ended up being exactly where we are.
There's Once again, something... you manifested this.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm seeing a theme here.
For sure. There's just something so magical about those really amazing, like, rolling hills out there in that part of the Sonoma Coast. with those Gold Ridge powdery soils. Mm-hmm. It's where Laura had made so many wines in the past that are just so incredible.
You're familiar with vineyards in that area. Yes. Had you made wine from this vineyard?
Not from this vineyard.
Your vineyard that you now own?
No.
Do you love just saying that?
I like to pinch myself sometimes. Yeah. But so this year we'll be making our first wine off of the estate, a Pinot.
Okay. How many acres is it?
It's 13 acres.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Mm-hmm. That's no joke.
And it's a mix of some new and established plantings. Yeah. So we'll have some more coming online in the next few years.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have estate Pinot Noir in 2025. And then we'll have some estate Chardonnay coming out after that shortly as well. Lots to look forward to making wine from our own estate here, in addition to these great partners that we've developed over the years. So there is always more to come from us at Spherix. So.
Congratulations. Sorry. That's huge. That's still a pipe dream for me, as owning 5 acres, much less 13. So I admire that you were able to do that. And I know that's got to feel amazing. So
thank you. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's do a final congratulations, not only on the vineyard acquisition and having your own estate, but Spherix as a whole.
Thank you.
Your growing portfolio, your successful relationship, working and playing. And again, just thank you so much for sharing these wines. I cannot wait for people to get their hands on these and to support and follow and purchase from the epitome of a small family winery, right?
Yeah.
It's the two of you. So
absolutely. Yeah. Again, thank you for having us here today to share our wine, to sip with you.
Yeah.
And
I like putting the spotlight on other people. I do like it myself, but I also like putting it on other people. And it was a pleasure to have you guys in the spotlight today. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for having us.
All ours.
Cheers.
All our pleasure.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I so enjoyed my time getting to know them both and tasting their really spectacular wines. And if you're a regular listener, you know there's a theme here over the last year and a half where I love to share not only joy and wine and food, but hopefully inspiration to go for it. If there is a dream, if there is a goal that you have, I feel that Laura and Brian are a perfect example of dreaming big and then taking the time and the steps to make it a reality. And I'm so excited for them and for you to get connected with them. The best way to do that, first and foremost, is visit their website, spherixwines.com. Spherix is spelled S-P-H-A-E-R-I-C-S, wine.com, spherixwine.com. And click the sign up button. You'll see you can't just purchase their wines on their website. They're too small and it's done all through allocation. But as you heard Brian say, if you sign up for their mailing list, they will reach out to you in January when they have their release. And you should reach out to them if you're coming to Wine Country anytime so that you can do some of that barrel or tank tasting that we talked about. Follow them on Instagram as well. It's Spherix Wine on Instagram. And my hope is that you've learned a little bit more about a sometimes misunderstood grape and type of wine, which is beautiful Chardonnay, and why it is so exciting and interesting and should be in your glass. And whatever you do between now and next week, I hope that you sip well.